Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. And we have a lot of show for you today. Coming up, as Ursula just said, from 12:30 to 1 o'clock, Pete Carroll's going to spend the whole half hour with us. And got a lot of stuff to talk with the coach about. And they have a big game on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens. But there's a lot of other interesting things we're going to explore. So Pete Carroll's show from 12:30 to 1 o'clock this afternoon. Nicole, do you ever do this when you're driving? If you're on the freeway and you go under an overpass, do you ever look up to make sure nobody's dropping something off the overpass?
Actually, we cover a lot of these kinds of stories, and so I do. I do too.
And when I lived in Ballard and was working at King 5, I would drive through Fremont every day to get to Dexter, and I would have to drive under the Aurora Bridge. And I would always look up, because back then there was kind of an epidemic of people jumping off the Aurora Bridge. And I mean, it was horrible. There were people coming to work, and jumpers would be in the parking lot of these businesses. Yeah. And I had this little Volkswagen Bug convertible, and I would always look up as I was going under the Aurora Bridge, almost obsessively. And now every day on going home, there are a couple overpasses, and I always look. Because, you know, over the years, there have been stories about people dropping chunks of concrete. And, you know, one person was killed several years ago, one driver, when a big, huge chunk came through their car. This is a story from a couple of days ago that I just didn't have time to get to yesterday. But it is such a great example of what ails our entire region with the drug vagrant crisis. Now, if you were listening to yesterday's show, we broke a story, had an exclusive, because an insider sent me a City of Seattle contract bid. A private company that goes in to clean up these homeless encampments, their bid that the city accepted for homeless encampment cleanup is $435 per man hour. So if they've got a crew of five, what would that be? 2,000 plus 35 times 575. $2,175 for a crew of five per hour to clean up a homeless encampment. $435 per person per hour. I got an email yesterday from an attorney who's been, you know, building his law practice for 30 years. And he says, I only bill $300 an hour to clean up a homeless encampment, $435 per person per hour. A lot of people asked the private company that got this contract, do they have any connection to any of the decision makers with the city of Seattle? There was an awful lot of investigation, speculation about that. And I will tell you, we reached out to the city of Seattle yesterday morning. The person Nicole emailed said, I'm going to forward your email to the proper people. And presumably that person did that. Have you heard back from anybody with the city of Seattle?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
We submitted a bunch of PDRs, so they may have seen that along with the request, and they're probably formulating. I don't know.
Okay. So this is your tax dollars at work that they allow. At first, they encourage heroin addicts from around the country to come to Seattle, come to the Puget Sound area, Snohomish County, where they've also legalized drugs, as has King County. So they encourage as many heroin addicts from around the country to get here. And then they don't enforce shoplifting. So if you're a heroin addict, all you have to do is walk into businesses and take whatever you want, knowing you will not be prosecuted for a property crime. So then you can fence that stuff for 5 or 10 cents on the dollar so you can get your next heroin fix. businesses are getting decimated or completely wiped out. And the word's out. The easiest place to be a heroin addict in the United States of America is here in the Puget Sound area, where drugs are legal, heroin, meth. If it's a personal possession amount, it's legal. You can shoot up in front of cops in downtown Seattle, no problem. They aren't going to waste their time on writing you up and processing paperwork when the prosecutor has already said that he will not prosecute personal possession amounts of drugs. So we got heroin addicts shooting up in the streets. We've got businesses getting wiped out. And then you have this incident that is our top story.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
Okay, so a couple of days ago, a guy was just driving to work, 5:30 in the morning, when all of a sudden a huge piece of metal came crashing through his windshield. And turns out he was driving near a homeless encampment, 5:30 a.m., and somebody just out of their mind decided to throw something that could have easily have been deadly at Wade Anderson, who talked to our news partners at Cairo 7 News.
It was a near-death experience for me.
And he saw the homeless guy who threw it just standing by the side of the road.
His arm came down like he threw something, and next thing I know, a big piece, chunk of metal flew from my windshield and hit me in the arm. My arm went numb instantly.
This guy knows that, his arm went numb, his windshield was smashed, but he says it certainly could have been worse.
I consider myself lucky, that it didn't do more damage.
So here you have a tax-paying, working, productive citizen who probably didn't want to answer the alarm. If he was driving to work at 5:30 a.m., his alarm probably goes off at 4:30 or so. He probably doesn't like having to get up at 4:30. I don't know. I haven't talked to the man. But he does, because that's what we do. Tax-paying, productive, working people. We sometimes do things that we're not crazy about, like get up in the dark of morn and drive ourselves into work at 5:30 a.m. And now this poor guy told Cairo 7 that he's probably going to have to alter his route to work.
I don't know if I will actually take that route to work anymore.
So what's it going to take? And I really mean this. We had the woman where a crazed, prolific offender tried to throw her off an overpass onto the freeway a few months ago in what clearly should have been charged as attempted murder. If Good Samaritans had not come to her aid, this woman would have died. There's no way if you're thrown 40 feet below to the freeway in rush hour, you're going to hit cars, cars are going to hit you, the 40-foot fall. No way you survive that. But our prosecutor has a revolving door. And you got this poor guy just trying to get to work. And a 9-pound chunk of metal gets thrown by this out-of-control person through his windshield. What is it going to take? And as I've said, they're proposing for the first time in just the city of Seattle budget. King County spends a lot more than this as well. But in the brand new city of Seattle budget, they're proposing over $100 million for homelessness. And Sawant says that she doesn't want any more sweeps of the camps. She just wants to build tiny houses, which, of course, is 180 degrees wrong. Housing first is the wrong solution to homelessness. As long as you have drugs legalized and property crime legalized or not prosecuted, then you, no matter how many people we house, more drug addicts are going to come here. There's no question about that. And, I mean, you got, the insanity of Sawant.
If you are fed up that your lives suck so badly, proudly embrace the struggle we're in.
So I'm fed up, but you are the problem. You and your fellow socialist Marxist politicians. And a lot of people's lives here suck. Business people who try to make a living, who have to, I talked to the guy yesterday, really nice guy from Seattle Beer Company, who has, you know, sent me a bunch of pictures of heroin addicts lying in the doorway of his workplace every day on top of the piles of their own filth and trash. And so Juan thinks that the solution is more of her. It's pure insanity. So what is it going to take? Is it going to take a politician's loved one to be killed by one of these maniacs? I don't want that to happen. I don't want them to have to pay the dearest price of sorrow. But I don't want anybody else to either. And yet we continue to do things exactly wrong. Durkin has no clue how to run a city. That's so obvious. There needs to be a wholesale change on the city council. And you know, the rest of King County and Snohomish County with legalizing drugs, it's all nuts. It's all absolutely nuts. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Bizarro World.
There's another one I didn't have time to get to yesterday. On Bainbridge Island, Blakely Elementary School, they've canceled Halloween. This has been an issue for a long time, but they said, we've been reviewing school practices around equity and inclusion. Can any government person, including our public schools, can they write any paragraph without the words equity and inclusion? That would be a good challenge for them. See if they could ever structure a paragraph without including and using the words equity and inclusion. Over the past 2 years, Blakely has been reviewing school practices around equity and inclusion in an effort to ensure our school community continues to be inviting and supportive for everyone. Oh, that's the other part of my challenge. You can't use the word inviting either. Blakely will not be participating in any Halloween events this year. Students will have a normal day. We will not allow costumes, parades, or parties. Because of equity and inclusion. Look, when I was a kid, I didn't have the Halloween costumes of my classmates. We didn't have anything. And it kind of sucked, as Kashama Sawant would say. Kind of sucked. And you know what? I survived not having as much as other kids who had the really cool costumes on Halloween. Quentin is a fourth grader at the school. We talked to Q13 News.
I'm very upset with that because it's really fun.
Here's what they used to do on Halloween.
All the classes get together in the school, and you basically just walk around the school seeing everybody's costume.
But this mom is okay with it.
If the staff thinks that this is best for our students, then I trust them and I'm going to support them.
I don't understand that. What parent says, if a government worker thinks this is best, then I will abide by what the government worker thinks? Yeah, not to cast aspersions on this particular mom, but I don't understand that at all. If the staff says this is best, what do you think? It's your kid. The staff is these brainwashed government workers. This dad told Q13 it's just all going a bit too far.
I get it on some level, right? The school district's trying to be respectful.
It's a school-by-school policy, which is a little strange. Kind of swinging the pendulum to I guess, you know, respect everyone, which, of course, I think most people in this community want to do. But at the same time, is there a big outcry?
Jeez. Let's err on the side of insanity.
And that was the thing with this one. No one actually complained about it. It was just decision they made.
Well, the principal sent a statement to Jason, and he said, I probably should have talked to more people before doing it. Yeah, but it's okay. We'll just continue to assign all control of our lives and our thoughts to the government. And then We don't have to think anymore. Yay! Being a leftist is fun. And that's your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, I have a lot of interesting stuff to talk with Pete Carroll about. The Pete Carroll Show, all next half hour, right here. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
All right, here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is brought to you by Pizza Hut and the Pro Club. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, it doesn't get much better than this. 6 weeks into the season, the Seahawks sitting at 5-1 with another big game coming up on Sunday, the Baltimore Ravens. They're tough, and they're coming to town. And as he does every Friday, Pete Carroll joins us. Coach, always great to talk with you.
What's up, Dory? Yeah, we got a big game, huh?
I know. I'll get to that in a few minutes. I have to tell you, Pete, I was watching your post-game press conference on Sunday in Cleveland, and you started talking about that fourth down stop, and you said that's when you feel the most alive. And I swear you were going to drop Jean-Paul Sartre in that press conference there.
Yeah, that's one of the great moments in the game. You know, there's other sports that have that moment, but when you're right there and you're playing and you're particularly on defense and you got to stop them, there's something that is so unique to that situation, intensity-wise, and the juice is flowing at the height, and you got to just, you're into total instinct. You know, you're just responding on total reflex action. And
yeah,
it's a wonderful time to be a ball player.
Just as a personal favor to me, I'm hoping you'll work Sartre in before the end of the season in a post game press conference. Okay.
I'll surprise you with it. Okay.
Okay. I look forward to that. I know it started a little rough. The first time since 2008 that the Seahawks defense had given up touchdowns on the opponent's first three possessions. And that's when Bobby Wagner decided to get motivational on the sidelines there. And, you know, it struck me between Russell and Bobby, one on each side of the ball, what a gift it is for a coach to have such emotional leaders who are also so talented.
Yeah, they have everything. You know, they have everything that you want in your leaders. And it starts with the great character that they have, but they also have the great ability, so they can back up whatever they're saying. And then they've got this just a gift, a gift to be there in the moment and have the right kind of instincts to say the right thing at the right time. And guys look for them, and they're waiting to almost respond to those guys in those kinds of moments. So it was great that Bobby pulled it off.
One thought that I had that I wanted to bounce off you, because in the past few years, without naming any names, we've seen some sideline outbursts. And as I was seeing Bobby, there was no question that was about the team and about wanting to win. And I thought maybe that's a little distinction between that and maybe some of the things we've seen on the sideline the last couple of years. Is that a fair distinction?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to pass judgment on what just arbitrarily what's happened on the sidelines over the years.
Right.
But I let's just go to what happened there. That was exactly what you hope your leader would do in the moment and would rally the troops in a sense, in a way that nobody else can. And just like Russ would do it in the huddle with his guys, he'll let them know and make them feel that it's going to turn, it's going to happen for the good. And Bobby did exactly that, with all the right intentions and all. And these two guys, as we noticed, we rewarded them in the off season for all of who they are and what they bring to this organization. And that was a really good illustration, really on both sides. Bobby got his defense going, Russell got his offense going, and we put together a great win.
You used some language that you and I have talked about a lot over the years, but you were talking about you have language for teaching toughness and grit and resilience. Where does that get taught? I mean, as a coach, is that on the field? Is that in the meeting room? Is that in private conversations? Where can you have the greatest impact in trying to impart those characters that are so important?
Well, there's a number of situations, and there's a time, during the in the off season meetings that we have with the players, there's time to kind of set the stage for principles and approaches that are, that will, you know, we'll constantly revisit when the teachable moments arise, you know, during the season. There's opportunities, you know, sometimes it's on the field, in camp, you know, and sometimes it's on the way to the meetings. It's certainly just an ongoing process to me, for me, Dory, to just keep hammering at the things that we believe in. And so, you know, old friend Lou Tice taught us a long time ago that it's not the one great presentation you give, it's how many creative ways you can come back to the emphasis, to the points that you really got to make. And so that's, there's a number of times. There's also just sitting having lunch with a kid and talking to him about a situation and citing what happened and, you know, what were you thinking at the time and what could you have been thinking and what is a player you look up to thinking like. And so it's just the teacher's kind of, you know, yoke they we're always on it. And
yeah.
So, but I think probably one of the most poignant times is when you can capture teachable moments. You know, when the moment just happened, you can make reference to it. You have good language that can get you right to the point, and then you jump on it, and then you come back and you got to revisit it again. You know, it's like the lessons are never over. Kind of, you just keep on teaching and working it, and try to, you know, hone the edge as well as you can.
One of the other things that you and I have talked about a lot over the years is, and I know it's something you are rightly very proud of, and that is, you know, when you're down 20-6, you guys don't start pressing, you don't start chasing, you stay the course, and you say that you have this mentality. And is it easier for you to convey that and make the players believe in that because you've won national championships and because you've been to two Super Bowls and won one? Is it easier for you to say, hey, we're fine, and they'd be foolish not to buy in given all you've accomplished?
Well, I don't know about that part of it, but yeah, it is easier for me because I have been through that and I've seen it. I've seen the results of and the impact of the mentality when you hold on to it and you always keep believing and you keep pushing for something that's going to happen for the good. You know, you just keep on battling. It was interesting that just last week, you know, we had a moment in practice where Chris Carson got hit in the shoulder and went down and got a stinger. And he laid on the ground for about 10 minutes, you know, nobody knew. We didn't know what was wrong with him. I mean, we didn't know what happened. You know, we didn't know if it was his head or his neck or what had happened. And he just had to chill out and he came right back from it soon. But in the next play, somebody fell down into George Fant's leg and he got tangled up for a second, thought he, you know, might have sprained his ankle. And then the next play after that, Justin Britt got tangled up and she looked like the whole world was falling apart on us, you know, and guys got kind of testy and all that. And then the practice came back together and we finished a great day. And I know after practice, I think it was on Thursday's practice a week ago, I addressed that issue that, you know, things don't always go the way you want and they don't always happen the way your expectations are structured to, you know, want that to go. And so when it does, how are you going to deal with it? You know, and everybody knows it. It's not what happens, it's how you deal with it. But then how do you deal with it? And what language do you use? And so I had just taking the moment in practice last week to capture the moment, and I was talking about the language that I use is I know something good is going to happen, and so I'm just immediately turn my focus to where I want it to go, and I say those things in my head, and I might even say it to somebody else, and I said that's how you practice resetting and getting on to the issue that's next, which is the next step you take in a positive outlook and how you turn it really in real deliberate manner. And sure enough, here we are.
Yeah.
You know, we got into halftime in this game and we had gotten back into it, you know, and we were 2018 at halftime, and it was exactly that language again. I said, look what just happened. We just went through this week, you know, and we've been through this before. So it is building on the moments and being able to, you know, to weave it together so it makes sense, and hopefully, you know, you do it well and they can grasp it and act on it, you know. So it's big lessons, you know. It's really fun. This is what this process is all about, is figuring all this stuff out.
Well, so far this season, it clearly all is working well for you, Pete. Okay, hold on, Coach. Pete Carroll's going to spend the rest of the half hour with us. We'll talk about the Sunday game coming up against the Baltimore Ravens and lots of other stuff I got to talk with the coach about. Coming up next is the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Back with Seahawks coach Pete Carroll, the Pete Carroll Show, every Friday here on the Dory Monson Show. So we were talking about your concepts of how to hold the team together through adversity. Assuming you had the same philosophies when you were a younger coach and your first go-round is in the NFL with the Patriots and the Jets, was it tougher to get guys to buy into that relentless optimism when you didn't have the credentials that you have now?
Yeah, that's the case. You know, when I went to New England, I went in right after they had just lost in the Super Bowl with Bill Parcells, the coach of the decade in the NFL, you know, and I'm, here comes little Pete, you know, running in there and trying to pick up the pieces. And put
together, little Pete.
So, I mean, yeah, I didn't really have the same kind of swag as Bill Parcells did, you know. So, yeah, it was different. It was different, and you have to earn your way. And fortunately, we had all that success at SC, and it allowed, you know, a lot of principles to come together and language to come together and a practice mentality and an approach that would give us a chance to build on the principles that you want to teach. So it does take time, and I don't know who can do it. I mean, there's some guys that do it right away, but I don't know how they can hang on to it. And usually they falter.
Yeah, yeah, no.
They get back on, you know.
All right, great stuff. Okay, the one really bad note on Sunday was Will Dissly. I snapped my Achilles when I was 27. It just sucks, Pete. What do you tap into when you talk to him after the game? Are you a father? Are you a coach? Are you a friend? What are you then?
I don't know. I think a little bit of everything at the time. I mean, I was just loving him up, you know, and hugging him. His attitude about it in the locker room after the game, he's in a big boot or whatever he was in, he's on crutches or something, you know, can't hardly get around. And he's telling me how quick he's going to get back and how he knows how to go through this. And he's been there before. And, you know, he's pumping me up, you know. So I'm in there trying to, with all the sympathy and all the feelings and compassion, all that. And I'm getting fired up for him because he's turned it around already. So that's why a guy like that is so special and so unique. He's got unbelievable makeup. As a matter of fact, his surgery on Thursday was really successful. He had a minimally invasive procedure that worked out perfectly, and he'll get back a good couple months before he would have got back otherwise, and probably in your healing process, you know, he should get back in a shorter call than that. So a lot of positive stuff with a great guy with a great mind, and he'll get through it.
Awesome.
It breaks everybody's hearts. He's a great kid.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. A lot's being made about Earl Thomas coming back, and you had some midweek, Pete, you said a couple of things about, you said, my heart's pretty big, pretty wide open to these guys from the time we spend together. You said, I'm going to love them no matter what. I know what the relationship means. And I looked at the comments in the Seattle Times. Here are the first couple ones posted. Pete always takes the high road. I need to learn that. He's a good role model. Another person said, Coach Carroll is a better person than I am. And I would suggest that that's one of my great failings, that I'm not good at forgiveness. I'm super competitive, as are you. But that tends to lead me to grudges. Where do you get that kind of grace and forgiveness and compassion and all that stuff?
Well, there's a couple of things. One thing, I mean, if you look at it, this isn't hard to understand. You look at it like he's your son. When, you know, our kids, they don't always do the right thing. And they sometimes have some horrific mistakes that they make over in their time. And how do we treat him afterward? You know, well, what do we? How do we look at it? You know, do we dump him and kick him out and you know, blast him? You know, you make it through it. You help him figure out what went wrong and how they could have done better, and you love him through it. And no matter how far off they may be, you don't stop loving them because they're screwing up or having problems. You know, you still love them, and so I don't think it's any different. So I don't think that's any major accomplishment. These guys, to me, they're not separate from that. That we come together, we get that, you know, we go through all this, and so if you really care for them, then you're going to find your way back to caring for them, regardless of what they do. And so, you know, I know they mean well. I know, you know, and I know that they, under circumstances, they might have done things differently, but that doesn't mean that you don't care for them and you're not going to look after them and do everything you can to help them. So that's the way I look at it. I don't know.
No, and that's very cool. And I mean, the level on which I think I relate to you best is as a competitor. And I've often said, professionally, my competitive spirit's one of my greatest blessings, and it's also one of my greatest curses. I mean, did you have to at any point in your life fight through what I think is human nature? Or did that always come natural to you?
Well, I think I'm better at understanding now that I'm older. You know, I learned some hard lessons by, you know, blasting back at guys when they made mistakes. I can remember, I've got a couple classic ones in my memory that, you know, when I flew off the handle and called somebody out or something like that. And I can remember the moment after when the guy looked at me like, why are you talking to me like that? You know, why are you treating me like this? You know, I said, yeah, no kidding. You know, what am I doing? You know, I remember really regretting a couple interactions like that. And I just, they just helped me grow up, and I wanted to treat people the way that they should be treated, and not just the way I reacted, you know, and the way that, you know, I impulsively responded to the situation. And part of that is, so often people, we throw it back at somebody else because we feel bad, you know, I want to be bigger than that, you know, I don't want to do that. So.
Yeah. No, it's very, very admirable. I really mean that. Okay, Baltimore Ravens. First of all, I know you're missing two starting offensive linemen last week, Dwayne Brown, DJ Fluker. Any updates there?
Well, we'll see. We're going to get all the way to game time on Friday. Fluke got back on the practice field, and Dwayne is still hurting. We're going to list him as doubtful, and in case some surprise happens, he's going to travel with us and all that, and maybe, you know, he can turn it around. But it's not looking very good for him. But DJ's got a chance.
Okay, and you're getting Rashad Penny back, right?
Yes.
Okay, and any others? You know, Lono Hill, Bradley McDougal, KJ Wright, Ziggy Ansah. How are all those guys looking?
KJ did fine, you know, later in the week, and he should be fine. Ziggy's going to take we're going to take a look at all the way up to game time, so we'll know something tomorrow. So Bradley, same deal. You know, we're going to wait all the way to game time with him. He'll have had a quiet week, but his back just spasmed up, and he just couldn't get loose earlier in the week. So he's got a chance to bounce back from that.
Okay, and give me just a quick thought on the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, the number 12 quarterback in passing yards is also the number 8 rusher in the league. Lamar Jackson's a handful.
Yeah, he is a fantastic player, and should credit the John Harbaugh and his staff to build an offense around him, and not, you know, fall prey to the typical NFL, you know, stigma about how a guy's supposed to be and play and how you're not supposed to run him and all that. He's a ball player, and he's tough, and he's physical, and he can make things happen, and he's really confident. He can throw all the throws. He can make all the runs. And as you've always heard me say about the scrambling quarterback, is the most difficult dimension to defend. This guy's unbelievable. So he's really putting on a show right now. You know, he's their leading rusher, and of course their passer too. So we got a handful. I really like this team. I love the way John puts it together, you know, because we admire his style. They're really tough on defense. They have fantastic special teams, and then they run the heck out of the football. So it makes it really hard to beat them. And you know, that's a makeup in a team that we really admire. And, you know, you got two teams kind of the same in that regard going at it this weekend. It's going to be great to see what happens.
Very cool. Nice to be in front of the 12s for a tough matchup like that, too.
Great to be coming home. No kidding.
All right. Pete, great stuff today. Really appreciate it. Have a fantastic game Sunday, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Joey. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll, with us. And we've got a lot more to do. We're going to check the news for you, and then our Fast 15 coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.